Good afternoon. Education Finance Committee will come to order. My apologies, members, for starting a little bit late. But we're still in the midst of deadlines. So I am going to reorder things a little bit so we can get members who are not on this committee to get their bills presented and then on their way, because I know some of them have other committees to present in. So before we turn to that, we do have minutes. Let's see, Representative Sandstead, would you like to move the minutes?
I do, Madam Chair.
All right, Representative Sandstead moves approval of the minutes from March 9th. Any questions, comments? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, minutes are approved. Thank you, Representative Sandstead. And with that, we will turn first to Representative Erdahl's bill. All right, welcome, Representative Erdahl. And I will go ahead and move that House File 149 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And please provide us information about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, this bill, House File 149, establishes a school finance task force to recommend changes to Minnesota's school funding system. The bill requires the Commission of Education to consider the recommendations and report to the legislature on whether the governor's proposed education budget meets the goals established by the task force. Now, we have a system that is quite complicated in terms of how we fund our schools. We have all kinds of formulas. We have all kinds of categoricals. We have all kinds of different things that enter in. I remember when I was first elected to the legislature in 2002 when I was still teaching, and one of the first things that came in the mail to me was a book on how we fund our schools. And then I brought it to our superintendent and asked him to explain it to me. And I don't know that neither of us understood when he was done. So it's a complicated system. And the goal of this is, all right, let's just say that tomorrow we're starting over as a state, or we're a new state. And how would we best fund our schools? Maybe we would find that the way we're doing it now is as good as we can do it. And there's no point in trying to do something different. I don't think that's true, but it could be. But let's look at ways that other states may be fun, ways that we can do it better, and go along those lines. I know it's not the first time that this type of task force has been established, but I think it is time again to take a serious look at how we do this. There is a blank spot where there's funding for this. My suggestion today would be that the Department of Education undertake funding this task force, which I don't expect to be a real large amount. I have a testifier here today, Mr. Lundell, and we turn it over to him.
All right. Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell, the school's director in education, here to testify in favor of Representative Erdahl's bill. As Representative Erdahl said, this isn't the first go-round on funding studies, but I think it's always important to look back over the last 20 years or so when there have been funding studies that good things have generally come out of those efforts. And I think that when you look at a variety of things. And again, I think that the formula has been complicated. As we've sat in this committee this year, we've had many folks come forward with nuances to the education funding formulas. And I think that rather than complicate things further, we probably need to look at are some of the mechanisms we are using sufficient to fund the real needs of school districts? Is the general education formula where it needs to be? Are our compensatory formulas working the way they intended? I know for one thing, the English language learning, as we talked about when folks came and did a presentation on compensatory revenue, all the backfill from compensatory revenue that's going in to fund the English language learning, and I think that that's a formula that needs to be looked at because it certainly isn't sufficient to meet the needs of non-English speaking students. So I think that there's a variety of things out there that can be looked at. Again, are we having adequacy? Are we doing things demographically and geographically? Is the property tax where it should be? Those types of questions, I think, are questions that change from year to year, and I think getting another snapshot in a study like this would be very, very helpful as we try to continue to meet the constitutional needs of students throughout state.
Thank you, Mr. Lindell. Any additional testifiers, Representative Burdahl?
I don't have any, Madam Chair.
All right. I saw someone raise their hand. Did you want to come down to testify, sir?
Yes.
All right. Come on down. All right. Welcome. If you please state your name for the record and then provide your testimony.
Yes. Chris Fleming. So I am in support of this bill, but I also think there's some room for improvement for the bill. So I would like to talk about the room for improvement with the bill. So I'm all in favor of the task force and equitable and funding within Minnesota school systems. That's something that definitely needs to be done, and it needs to be done to a level equitable and just be done with intentional. What I don't approve or would like some room for improvement is the appointee positions. All 15 of these positions are appointed positions, and as with other committees on appointed positions, usually the appointed positions don't go to community members or people who are really on the floor doing the work or who are really in background of myself. I am a teacher in North Minneapolis. I am an educator. I am a founder of an education foundation. So for community members or public members to not be included in this bill, this task force, to have decision-making power on how Minnesota funding schools will be, is a disgrace to the people on the floor. So I do have two amendments that I hope that Representative Adolf will consider with this. One of the amendments is, if you go to line 1.13, is to the school financial task force should have, I would say, if we raise it to 20 members, and then if you go down to line 1118 underneath that, is to add five of those members would be open for community members application through the Secretary of State website. If Representative Erdoff do not want to accept raising it to 20 members, I will propose us keeping it at 15, but then taking away in 1.15, put in for the governor, having them appoint four members, and then for 1.16 and 1.18, having the House of Educational Finance Committee and the Senate Education Committee only appoint three members, and they're giving five members to be through application for the Senate Secretary of State for community members who work in the school district. So whether public administrators, whether superintendents, whether teachers, whether ESPs, or parents and guardians of the scholars who this Minnesota finance will, this task force will affect.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Fleming. We appreciate it. Any other testifiers? All right. Seeing none, we do have a couple of questions from members. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just a quick comment to Representative Rudolph. Thank you for introducing this bill, because as I've tried to present some legislation, I've had to get runs done even before I knew what the bill would do so I could even talk about it, and I just feel that it's important that we make sure that what we're doing is fair and equitable for students across the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. Representative Scott, or did you want to comment? I'm sorry, Representative Rudolph.
No, a fine comment by Representative Peterson.
Thank you. Sorry. Don't want to rush this too quickly, but I am trying to make sure we don't have to be here late tonight. And we're keeping the list. So I've got both of you down. Representative Scott.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. So Representative Erdahl, wouldn't the five members appointed by the governor, isn't a possibility that those could be members of the public, like the previous testifier suggested?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Scott, yes, of course. I would expect, certainly an open appointment process that members of the public who wish to be appointed to this would have the opportunity to apply.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm sure, Representative Erdahl, would it be your thought on this task force that they would hear testimony from members of the public so the public would have input?
Representative Erdahl.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erdahl, I think it would be wise if you listed a group of stakeholders, a long list of stakeholders, much like we did a year ago when we had the legislative study group for teacher licensure reform. It was a study group, so it was legislators in charge, but we had testimony at every meeting from a wide variety of stakeholders that included the public and every educational organization, and that really worked very well because they always knew that they were going to be recognized and the public as well. So sometimes it is important to list stakeholders among other groups. You know, you can always have that general ending statement.
Thank
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erickson, certainly that can be considered. I guess were this to be included in the final bill, you know, there would be room for that to be added by those on this committee or in conference committee or however that would work.
Representative Erickson. Right. Representative Thiessen.
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, when this went through the other two committees, did they question the subdivision 2?
Representative Erdahl.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, no, they did not.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, I just don't quite understand number 2. In this case, I'm reading the second point, especially. You would be able to pick five people, and it seems to me they could be any five people in your world of your world sphere, whether they're representatives or not. Was it intended, Representative Erdahl, that the education finance chair would pick representatives or members of this committee or her next-door neighbor or anybody in the world?
Representative Erdahl.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, it does not specify. I mean...
And you don't care? Or do you care? Who do you think would people apply?
Representative Erdahl.
Representative Murphy, I'm sure that there will be application provisions. But I also have trust in the folks that would be making the appointments or the groups that would be making the appointments that they would do so in a judicious manner considering those people who have connections to education and experience in education. But not necessarily all of them. I mean, we don't have to have a panel of education experts here. It has also been my intent that people... you know, who were not experts could be part of this.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, was there any discussion at all when it passed through government operations?
Representative Erdahl.
No, Madam Chair. Yeah, you know.
Representative Erickson.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, was there discussion about Subdivision 2 when it was in your committee?
Representative Erickson, would you care to yield?
Madam Chair and Representative Murphy, not other than from the chair.
Representative Murphy.
And Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, do you want to share some of your questions? It was a long time ago, so you might not.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I always think it's wise to have a legislative study group where we legislators, you know, conduct the meetings. We use the Legislative Coordinating Commission as we did last summer during the interim for the teacher licensure. And then we list in the bill a wide variety of stakeholders, but also include, you know, that it's open to all. And so when you set up that base for stakeholders, it sets the parameters to begin with, and then you can expand or delete from there. But they're always welcome at the hearings. And we really had great input during our interim hearings to come up with our final product. So that's just my preference.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I'm not the author, so.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erickson, I appreciate that. And I do think Subdivision 2 needs a little work. But as you said, it's going on its way, and we can make our suggestions to you. But I think all these groupies should be able to be included. And Representative Erickson has a solution for that, for so they're on the mailing list and the calling list and so forth. And I won't take up any more time. But Madam Chair, I really attend meetings pretty well in the interims, and I have an interest in school finance and school finance reform.
And I suspect you're more interested than my next-door neighbor, Representative.
I have no idea about your neighborhood, but I'll share some stories from my neighborhood with you.
I'm very interested, but busy with lots of little kids at home. But anyway. Representative Erdahl, would you like to comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to say, as I said earlier, that with us to pass on and be in your omnibus role, the committee could make changes to this particular section or later in conference committee or whatever. I actually did have a particular reason for not listing all kinds of different groups, because when I've done this in the past, I found it became never-ending, that everyone wanted then to be on the group, on the task force. And certainly their voices are all welcome. But that was my reasoning when we did this, just to have numbers and not list where they're from. But that can be changed.
All right. Representative Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the working group is a good idea also, and can support that. But sort of testify a point about creating a space for other stakeholders to be on in the working group, I think is a really good idea. Who may be, principals or teachers or some around the state, because we want to have, fair and equitable conversations and outcomes, we have to make sure that that they are part of the key process and not just testifiers, right? That they are really in the weeds of kind of like directing what that recommendations to us can be. So I just wanted to just state that and say that often enough those key stakeholders are not part of the decision-making processes, that they are the testifiers. So and hopefully we can get some diversity to be a part of the key stakeholder group, the working group.
Madam Chair, Representative Moran, thank you. Those are good points.
Representative Devney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And turning to page 1, line 8, Representative Erdahl, you identify the goals of school finance formulas be that they be equitable and efficient. And I'm noticing the absence of words like adequate or sufficient. And it makes me think that I could set up a little production line and very efficiently make 12 bologna sandwiches and give all the staff and members around the table a half a sandwich for lunch. And it would be equitable and it would be efficient. And I'm not sure many people would find it to be adequate or sufficient for lunch. And I'm wondering why you limited to two legitimate values, but fairly narrow, and certainly not values that speak to the needs of students.
Representative Erdahl.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, sometimes we make assumptions. And Representative Dabney, I think you've known me enough years to know that I'm not one who has not been supportive of adequate funding for education. I have consistently advocated for higher education, or suddenly Norness got in my head, for more money for our public schools. And I guess I was just assuming that adequate was included. In my head, it was anyway. If we need to put that word in, that's not a big deal.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And certainly, Representative Erdahl, I would not question your motives nor your experience, but as I sometimes try to educate my constituents, we pass words, not concepts. And we certainly saw that in both the tax bill and the bonding bill last year. Words matter. So thank you very much.
All right. Representative Sandstedt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erdahl, the committee appointments in both the Senate and the House side, how would that work? If I look around the table at all of us here, we are the committee. Would we nominate individuals and then somehow among this large group come to consensus, or what would the process be?
Representative Riddle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Basically, as it says, I mean, five members will be appointed, and then the committee chairs of the Senate and the House could design the process by which that happens. It could be you take nominations from the committee. It could be that the committee chair comes up with a list and offers it to the committee. But I think that I have faith in our committee system and our committee chairs to come up with a process that would work well for everyone.
Okay. All right. I'm not seeing any other questions. Final comments, Representative Erdahl.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. I certainly think that this is a needed bill. Again, there are places where you can do some tweaking to it, and certainly I'm grateful in some respects that you gave me a harder time than anybody else has. So with that, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Erdahl. And I renew my motion that House File 149 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And we thank you very much for your testimony and of the other testifiers as well. All right. Representative Cagle. And members, this is House File 550 in your packets. All right, and I will go ahead and move your bill to get it before us. I would move that House File 550 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill or action at a later time. And welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. This being my first time in front of the committee, I've brought treats. These are beehives from Ham's Bakery in Blaine. So, let me know how they are.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your thoughtfulness, and we always appreciate treats.
So. House File 550 is a $200,000 grant to Anoka Hennepin School District to purchase equipment and software for a fabrication lab at the STEP program in collaboration with Anoka Tech and private programs. Innovation and collaborative problem solving are core skills for virtually any STEM career. Yet most high school students will graduate without experience of having ever designed a solution and built a working prototype. This lab aims to be the space where this exploration is possible. In the Anoka County area, manufacturing makes up 20% of all careers with an average wage of $79,000. Manufacturing is in critical need of students and workers entering into these fields, and it is important to show our students how creative and expansive the manufacturing industry can be. Design and fabrication labs allow students to experiment, take risks, and play with their own ideas, giving them the permission to trust themselves. While inventing, we need to acknowledge that there is more than one right answer, and that gives students permission to feel safe while learning and problem solving. STEP's goals is for students to see themselves as learners who have good ideas and can transform those ideas into reality. And with that, I'll turn it over to my testifiers, Superintendent of Anoka Hennepin School District, David Law, and Mike Hilder, an instructor at STEP.
Very good. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good to see you again. Today I'm supporting our STEP program. You may not be aware that there are just a handful of technical high schools around the state. We're fortunate to have one in our school district that services 12,000 of our high school students, as well as students from neighboring school districts. Our technical program offers coursework for students in auto mechanics and auto repair, construction, welding, EMT, nursing, cosmetology, among others. And offering those programs and being up to date can be a challenge. So we're here today in support of Representative Cable. I'm very thankful that she brought us down here just to showcase what that might look like in our credible community. And I have a teacher here who can speak much better to the program, Mike Hilbert.
Thank you, Superintendent. Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you. My name is Michael Hilbert. I'm an engineering manufacturing teacher at STEP, a secondary technical education program at Anoka High School School District. We need an education system that prepares students with the necessary skills to meet the requirements of a high-demand and highly skilled workforce. The secondary technical education program continues to respond to the demands of the workforce by preparing students for post-secondary education and encouraging high school students to take advantage of opportunities to move through a seamless education pathway resulting in a post-secondary credential. Career and technical education programs at STEP play a crucial and a critical role in aiding students' successful transition from secondary to post-secondary education and ensuring they are prepared for necessary careers with the essential skills required in today's workforce. We need programs that are innovative and ensure that all students have opportunities to gain the skills and credentials necessary for success in the 21st century economy. Implementing a Fab Lab in Anoka Hennepin School District would provide real-world relevant experience for students that promise innovation, collaboration, and in-depth experience in STEM education and high school, high-wage and high-demand careers. Local business community sees collaboration and partnerships with the STEP and Anoka Technical College as a pathway to meet the critical technical and academic demands of the 21st century workforce and improving the community's economy. We have long-standing partnerships with our community as they serve on our joint advisory boards, guide our curriculum, and provide necessary professional development for our teachers. Our demographic area has critical need for manufacturing and implementation. A Fab Lab would allow our secondary schools, post-secondary students, and local workforce to partner and collaborate to provide a skilled workforce within our community. Having a Fab Lab in our community would allow students to embrace creative and innovative learning, as well as participate in mentorship opportunities, all while being connected to a global community of educators, technologists, researchers, and other innovators. The implementation of a Fab Lab in our community would help us to strengthen the transition from secondary to post-secondary education, eventually fulfilling our workforce by closing the skills gap, providing our students with the technology, curriculum, and opportunities for innovation that expands beyond manufacturing, but is really a cross-curricular opportunity for students. Imagine if we could encourage our non-traditional female students to embrace engineering and design more traditional female careers like fashion design, or even engaging our biomedical students in designing and developing life-saving biomedical devices. A Fab Lab in our community would be another way to collaborate with our partners at Anoka Technical College, Anoka Ramsey Community College, Professional Workforce Training Center to engage high school, college, and local businesses and industry. Because of these reasons, we would greatly support Representative Cagle's bill to benefit students through a Fab Lab in our community. And it also brings in, we can bring in our middle school students, our elementary school students, to the whole concept of what manufacturing and innovation and critical thinking skills and having fun with things and doing all sorts of manufacturing and ideas that would really help that need for the critical workforce. I've been a teacher for only about 17 years. I was in business before that, and I can see that need just of what's happening now and what's going on in our workforce and what's happening with people retiring. And we can't replace these workers right now, and we're looking to have this Fab Lab in our district to bring this all together and be an innovator for the state to show that these type of things can be very critical and very promising to help the workforce in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hilbert. We appreciate your testimony. Very compelling case. And any questions? For his testimony, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hilbert, does Anoka Technical College have a fabrication lab?
Mr. Hilbert.
Chair and Representative, that at this time we do not.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that's why you're asking for it at the Anoka School District instead of trying to, let's say, motivate Anoka Technical to provide a fabrication lab.
Yes.
Mr. Hilbert.
Thank you, Chair. And also, the collaboration. Right now, I share facilities with Anoka Technical College, so my students are using the mills, the lathes, some of the small CNC equipment. This is to enhance the whole program within the college and within our school district. You know, we can't have 7th and 8th graders taking classes at the college right now, but it would increase their thoughts of, you know, a 2-year, 4-year college, and also show them that, listen, if you would like to take a class later on, or even older students, if you would like to take a class, we were offered this fab lab to show you what can be done and what you can do. And then there's opportunities for them to take other classes in the college for enrollment and doing things in their 3D CAD, in their machining area, in their welding area, in their fabrication areas. So that's where we're looking to partnership with them and share the facilities.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Hilbert, the STEP program is excellent. I had experience with it several years ago when I was in the classroom, and my home district cooperated with Anoka Technical College in the STEP program, and I saw great success, but we wandered away from that, unfortunately. But Mr. Strom, Madam Chair, if I may, Mr. Strom, didn't we fund some kind of traveling lab last year or the year before? Could you tell us what that was, and was that fabricated?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, yeah, that was through one of the cooperatives, I believe, in the northern part of the state, but let me double-check both the dollar amount of that and the actual recipient. That was part of the one-time grants from last year. Give me 1 minute to check here.
And Madam Chair, if Mr. Strom would also tell us what area it was going to cover, so we know it was covering quite an area. Madam Chair, just one last question for Mr. Hilbert. How extensive is the STEP program throughout the state today? Do you know, other than through your school and Anoka Tech? Do we have it, you know, in other schools like we have it in your district?
Mr. Hilbert or Mr. Ma?
I think there are three programs around the state like STEP.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's pretty sad. I think Representative Nash's apprentice program would work nicely into this. Don't know if you're aware, Superintendent, of a bill that was introduced last week by Representative Jim Nash that links industry with apprenticeships and the educational setting. And, you know, this could all be complementary if we get together and work this out. So thank you for being here, and thank you for your work with the STEP program, because it is really invaluable to our students.
Thank you. Other questions? All right, seeing none, Representative Cagle, any final comments?
I just want to thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing this bill, and I want to thank my testifiers for coming down and supporting this, the Fab Lab. So thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Oh, and before we lay your bill over, Mr. Strom, I think, has the answer to Representative Erickson's question.
Madam Chair, members, Ms. Adrian points out to me it was $900,000 that was appropriated, and the recipient was the Pine to Prairie Cooperative Center. And the language in the rider read $900,000 to establish a Western Minnesota Mobile Labs program, including manufacturing and welding labs, to create interest in those careers. Program must be operated by the Pine to Prairie Cooperative Center in collaboration with Northland Community Technical College, Lakes Country Service Cooperative, and the Minnesota State Community and Technical College System.
Representative Erickson.
So, Madam Chair, have we had any follow-up on what's happening in regard to that grant that we offered?
Well, I don't know if there's been any kind of report that's come either through the department or from the district. I think that was an initiative offered by Representative Keogh, if I'm recalling correctly. And I did talk with her about it early this session, just ask her how it was working, and I think it was the schools love it, and it's been very helpful, but that's a rather informal report.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Strong.
All right, so not seeing any other questions. Thank you, Representative Cagle, for your presentation for the, what is it called, a beehive?
Beehive
treats. I can't wait to have one as soon as we're done with committee. And with that, I would renew my motion that House File 550 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill for action later time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for coming to committee today. All right, Representative Carlson. All right, Representative Carlson, welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, I'd like to move House File.
Well, I'll move the bill for you. I'm sorry, you have to be on the committee to move it, but I'll move House File 1744, be laid over for possible inclusion or further action a later time. And you are now recognized to speak on the bill, Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Just by way of some brief introductions, this is an appropriation of $75,000 for a grant to the Wirtz Museum located in Bloomington. With that, the Wirtz mission statement states that the intent to inspire the next generation of innovators, engineers, and creative problem solvers. The Wirtz provides an essential science, technology, engineering, and mathematic, or STEM, education to elementary school students across Minnesota. The Wirtz is an essential component to the community pathway preparing today's children for tomorrow's high-tech jobs. And just a quick few statistics in terms of the importance of STEM education within our state. According to the Economic Modeling Specialists International, Wilder Research, and the U.S. Department of Education, STEM jobs will grow potentially 13% in Minnesota by 2024. Compared to 8% of growth in other industries, so quite a significant need for these types of jobs. Only 10% of Minnesotan high school students plan on a STEM major in college. So by introducing students to STEM education at a younger age, hopefully can inspire them to pursue that later in life. And between 4th and 5th grade, students reported interest in STEM has dropped from 57% to 30%. So all the more reason to help invigorate and inspire students to take on these types of jobs. So with those opening remarks, today I have with me Jill Menzel and Brenda Rainey from the Wirtz, and they're going to share some comments with you as well. And I believe there was a handout. If we can get that passed out too, it kind of gives a nice, you guys got it? Great. Provide some additional information as well. So,
Dan, okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jill Mazzals, and I'm CEO of the Wirtz Museum, and thank you for having us here today. Thank you, Representative Carlson, for your wonderful introduction to the Wirtz, for those of you who may not be familiar with us. I'm excited to be here today to take a few minutes to talk a little bit about the Wirtz Museum, and I think we had a great lead-in to the Fab Lab proposal, because they were talking about high school and engaging middle school and high school students in STEM education, and we're all about inspiring that initial interest in elementary age students in science, technology, engineering, and math education. First of all, I want to say thank you. We received an appropriation in fiscal FY15 for $75,000 for the Wirtz, and we use that to really improve our visitor spaces, visitor experience, and education programs for all of our visitors. We had some impressive results with that. Our attendance over the past 5 years has gone from serving 30,000 children and families to serving almost 80,000. And the appropriation from the state really helped us refine our programs and deliver more programs on-site as well as off-site throughout greater Minnesota. It's really hard to help people envision what kids do when they come. We do a lot of different hands-on activities, so I thought I would just share with you a couple quotes of some kids that were recently at the Wirtz. We do a workshop on simple machines where kids get to learn about levers and gears, and they build a catapult. And I corrected a little bit of the grammar, but basically this student said his visit was awesome. It blew his mind because the catapult, he never made one. He actually got to see one, but it was the first time he actually got to see something and make it. And also, it was the first time he ever got to use a saw.
and that was awesome as well. And so we think about this idea of inspiring kids and engaging them to design and build, and they need these tools, and they need these creative inspiration ideas to start their engineering minds working. Another student said, he'll always remember, I think it was a girl, always remember my visit as a time to express my knowledge of science and test it at your museum. So we already got these wheels churning, and this is our job now to nurture this in creativity and inspiration and build it at the Works Museum. It's great to hear the words of children, but we also hear a lot of testimonials from teachers. And I think one of the key testimonials, I've actually had a conversation with a teacher, was about why she brings her students to the Works Museum and takes our circuit tree workshop in the spring with her fifth grade class. And the reason she does it is because one of our goals is to support teachers in the classroom. And as she was helping prepare her students for the MCA test in the spring, this was about a year or two ago, the circuitry workshop really helped reinforce those concepts and knowledge around science and engineering using circuits that was actually a little bit of a focus on the test. So straight from a teacher, no prompting, they said, you are here, you are a great resource for us. We do a lot of professional development for elementary age teachers. Elementary age teachers are generalists. They don't have a science degree or background. So we really help them integrate science and engineering into those K-12 science standards. So that's a little bit about what we do. And we, like I said, we teach a lot through our classes, through our summer camps, as well as our school group workshops. We recently activated a new strategic plan, and this renewed request for $75,000 would be very helpful for us to activate that plan. We have three primary goals within that plan. One is to become a more relevant resource to our changing and diversified community in Bloomington. Bloomington is a very rich, diverse community, and we need to do more and listen to our community and be there for them. Be there for those diverse community needs that we see within Bloomington and the public schools in Bloomington. And we'll start there, but those needs would serve our broader community as well. The second goal is to be that primary business and academic support partner. So when we hear from businesses and our corporate partners, you can really help us support workforce readiness and get kids ready for these 2023 jobs. We want to be a partner at the table with them on how to do that, as well as with our academic partners, not only on the elementary age level, but also in higher ed as well. How can we partner with higher ed? We've partnered with the University of Minnesota, University of St. Thomas many times to deliver joint programming to engage young children. And the third goal is to continue to strengthen the engineering experiences for our visitors. And as Anoka Hennepin talked about the Fab Lab, we're really looking at building what we call a maker space. So if you think of a space where kids can come in, children and their families, to come in to design, create, and engineer using real tools and real materials to explore engineering design and become inspired and actually use those STEM critical thinking and problem-solving skills that all kids need. If you think of the space as, as your grandparents' garage, where you'd see maybe your grandpa or even your grandma out there tinkering or working in the car, this would be a space where kids can come in and tinker, but with really cool tools, really cool materials, and with 21st century technologies. We've already secured funding for conceptual design of the space, so support from the state would actually be for final design and to help us start the build-out of the space, which we look to start working on in the next 18 months after we're done with conceptual design. So, Ben, I thank you for having us here today and really appreciate the opportunity to share a little bit about the Works Museum.
Thank you very much. And are you here to provide testimony?
My name is Brenda Rainey. Thank you. I'm just here to help answer questions.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions for the author or the testifier, Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let's see. I want to ask, is it Ms. Rainey?
Yes.
Oh, okay. But I'm going to ask Ms. Measles. So you said that, you said that you partner with St. Thomas or other schools. So is it their teacher preparation programs that you partner with so that those candidates for licensure, as you said, elementary teachers are generalists and they need to see the science at work, et cetera, math, technology. Is it they with whom you partner?
Ms. Measles.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson. We've done a couple different partnerships with them. One partnership, we've worked with their students in their engineering design classes, where they have come to the works to observe students in action and then go back and try to come up with suggestions for design experiences for the museum. And that was more with like the freshman level class, so it was with their engineering students. But again, trying to think holistically about how you engage young kids. The other class we worked on was with their senior design team, where they actually designed and built an exhibit for the museum. So no, not specifically educators. We have participated, some of our education staff have participated in their engineering certification for teachers at the University of St. Thomas.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And then Ms. Rainey, would you like to add?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Another key way that we've engaged with the University of St. Thomas is actually through some of our public programming. So we have one of our big events every year is called Girl Time, and it's specifically around engaging girls in engineering by having a whole day full of female practicing engineers and engineering students. And the Society of Women Engineers chapter at the University of St. Thomas has come in along with some of their female engineering professors and done interactive projects and displays with the families that are visiting. And for a lot of these girls and their parents, it's kind of the first time that they've seen, huh, this is really a path that my daughter could pursue as well. And St. Thomas has been a great partner that way.
All right. Any other questions? Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to thank Representative Carlson for bringing forward the bill. The Works is an asset in the community, and I've said in committee before, we need to grab the kids early. That you know, waiting until they're in middle school even, but let alone waiting to high school, is too late. I did want to make sure Ms. Rainey mentioned the Girls' Day and make sure that Representative Murphy knew about that. I had the privilege of attending that one day and had an interesting experience meeting a wonderful young woman who was a engineer at one of our big med tech firms, I forget which one, and she said she became interested in biomedical engineering in middle school, and that her parents were not supportive. But here, 10-ish years later, she had landed her dream job, and it was because of the support of institutions in the community that were supportive of girls going into engineering and STEM, and who were willing to support her interest while her parents thought basically that biomedical engineering was just kind of was, I think, her language. They just thought it was a little creepy. She thought it was fascinating, and what a great role model then to the girls who were showing up on Girls' Day to see this young woman, active, dynamic, and be able to connect with the girls and with the parents. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Any comments, or
maybe just some closing
remarks? Representative Carlson?
Yeah, I would just comment that my girls, two girls, are in Bloomington Elementary School, and once a year they'll take a field trip to the works, and it's one that I don't want to miss in terms of being the chaperone, because it's such a fun place. So try to, you know, get to be a kid for a while. So thank you, and appreciate your support.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you to our testifiers. We appreciate you being here. And with that, I will move that renew my motion, House Bill 1744, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. And so I think, Representative Krisha, if you want to take the chair and I'll do mine, and then we'll swap and do your.
Very good. Welcome to the committee, Madam Chair.
Would you like to make the motion that your bill be laid over for possible inclusion?
I would. I would move that House File 1906 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, Mr. Chair.
And with that, the bill is in front of us. To your bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And full disclosure to the committee, I did get a little bit of razzing about whether or not I brought treats today. So, but since I did get a chance to consult with Representative Cagle about the type of treat she was bringing today, she shared with that information with me last night. I feel like somehow I had a small part in that, but very, very small, only saying that they sounded really yummy. So with that, House Bill 1906 deals with PSEO and really trying to ensure that our students have the opportunity to earn college credits while they're in high school. This is an initiative that our state has undertaken, has supported through PSEO, through concurrent enrollment, AP, IB, various programs that we have. And unfortunately, we've had some either enacted into law previously or circumstances have grown up around how the PSEO program is operated in some areas of the state that has really sought to, I think, discourage students from taking advantage of this. It saves millions of dollars to Minnesota families every year by being able to do this. And so that is the spirit in which House Bill 1906 is offered. And so just really quickly, and I know we're going to want to get to testifiers, but the bill's key points, first of all, there's currently what's called a gag rule in which institutions of higher learning cannot, sort of let parents know that their students or their children could be availing themselves of these classes. And so that would be removed. We would strike that sort of gag rule provision. Would require that schools would provide equal access to school equipment to PSEO students, so such as computers. It would allow charter schools to participate in the middle college high school program. It would allow an appeal to the Commissioner of Education on the topic of weighted grades, which can be an issue that occurs with PSEO courses. And so with that, I think I will just allow testifiers to kind of tell the rest of the story and then be happy to answer any questions from the committee.
Very well. And with that, let's call your first testifier, Mr. Nathan, from the Director of Center for School Change. If you would come up and state your name and your testimony, and if I could get Claire and Kayla Westra on deck, if you want to come up as well and be ready to go. Mr. Nathan, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, over the last 32 years, on a bipartisan basis, the legislature has said it's important to provide various options for young people to earn college credit. And as the chair said, this can be both school courses offered in the high school as well as courses offered on a college campus. And more recently, it's been done with a combination of sort of a hybrid and with college courses offered online. There also are some high schools that are collaborating in a terrific way to offer concurrent enrollment. Representative Dabney and others have helped expand the college and the school's concurrent enrollment, which is a terrific option. There are three basic principles embodied in this proposed legislation. The first is free speech. It's not a Democratic or a Republican principle. It's an American principle. As a public school teacher, administrator, parent, PTA president, father of three, all of whom attended public schools, parent of a woman who recently retired after 33 years as a public school teacher, I've been proud to support free speech for educators, more opportunities for educators to create new kinds of options within schools. And this is free speech. It is simply saying that colleges can do what high schools can do, which is to tell kids about the advantages and disadvantages. And there are disadvantages as well as advantages. So the first is the principle of free speech. It's important to note that this was something that was discussed extensively several years ago. We thought we had some agreement until the last day of the legislature. And so the first principle here is freedom of speech. The second principle is equal access to equipment, to opportunities. And the third principle is a very important principle also having to do with equity. These young people from the University of Minnesota, young people from Greater Minnesota, their families, they're not asking for anything unusual. They're not asking for more. They're just asking for equal treatment. They're saying it's fine to wait. Advanced placement, excellent option, or college in the schools, excellent option. That's fine to wait that if you're going to wait that. But if you're going to wait those grades because of the huge implications for jobs, For college admissions and for scholarships, we think that they ought to be weighted equally. And rather than have a mandate, we want to allow youngsters to appeal. Certain school districts are fine about equal weighting. Others are not. We want to allow an appeal. It's an imperfect solution, but those are the principles that are embodied in this legislation. Recognizing you have many other people to talk with, I think we're going to turn to other folks from who have experienced this directly in their own lives.
And thank you, Mr. Nathan. And if Claire and Kayla Westrick come up, welcome to the committee. And you traveled from Fulda. Welcome. So if you state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, representatives, for allowing me to speak today. My name is Claire Westra, and I'm a senior at Fulda High School. I'm involved in band, choir, National Honor Society, FCCLA, BPA, volleyball, and basketball. I'm one of 10 students who take online PSEO classes on a part-time basis through Minnesota West. Since I have enrolled in college courses through PSEO, I have gained a better understanding of the real world. By taking online classes, I have learned from others outside of my school. I have been able to better grasp different concepts of learning. Getting outside of the normal classroom has been liberating. It has allowed me to be creative. I have developed critical thinking and problem-solving skills. I have also become more independent and resourceful. This program holds the promise of a better future for those who don't know how they will pay for college. It offers an opportunity for students to better themselves. The PSEO policy that was enforced in Fulda at the beginning of the school year has been extremely draining on me and my fellow students. Even though we only take dual credit online classes for part of our class load, we are not allowed in the building during those times. We must leave the building several times a day. This barrier has caused a strain on our relationships with other students and the faculty. It has had a negative impact on our academics and taken away leadership opportunities. We feel as though we are cast out from our school. The PSEO program gives opportunities to all students, no matter their financial status. I would ask the legislator to remove the barriers that these schools put in place by not allowing us in the building or to use the library. It is important that we put the focus back on student success. Help us overcome the barriers and allow students to access the education they have earned through hard work and determination. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
And thank you. And I know you've traveled a long ways. I just want to make sure, do you have enough time to stand for questions? Very good. Okay, with that, I'm going to bring up Cantalina. Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me.
My mom.
Thank you.
My name is Kayla Westra, and I'm a parent, and I live in Fulda, Minnesota. And thank you, Madam Chair and representatives, for your work on House File 1906 and the PSEO legislation. It's important for all children to have opportunities to become the best versions of themselves, not who we think they should be, but the best versions of themselves. As Alan Beck said, in teaching, you can't do the Bloom stuff if you don't take care of the Maslow stuff. And so when we deny students shelter in the school building, it is very difficult for them to move to higher level learning and thinking when they can't even be in the physical public school building for part of the day. Taking a college class through PSEO, if you qualify for that opportunity, should not be dependent on whether or not you have a car, a place to go, a computer, and Wi-Fi. And right now, those are the requirements for the students in our district. Schools should be required to allow these students to stay in the building and to use the resources that are available. To deny students access to a public school building is a policy that I will not be silent about. As a lifelong learner and a career educator, I cannot allow the unacceptable to become the norm. What schools like Fulda and others are doing in removing students from the school is not an acceptable practice in any form of education. Every child is just one caring adult from being a success, and we must be those caring adults for students in Minnesota. We cannot allow schools to create barriers. Opportunity without support does not equate to access. And we do students across the state a disservice when schools are allowed to deny them entry to a public school building. We cannot allow discriminatory policies that increase the divide between the haves and the have-nots. These types of policies can cause long-term harm to some of our students. So thank you again for your work on this legislation, and thank you for being the voice of the students.
Very good. And I'm going to have you hold your applause and get to the testimony. And if you can hang, Ms. Westra, go ahead and can you stay for one second? I'm going to ask you and Claire just a couple questions while you're up here. 20-some odd years ago, I taught in Ivanhoe, so I'm very familiar with the area and the distances. To Kayla, could you tell the community, embellish a little bit about your experience? I mean, you gave a very nice testimony, but tell us exactly what was the day-to-day hardships? I mean,
We live about 2 miles from school, a mile and a half from school. So during bad weather days, Claire, you know, travels back and forth. Some of the students live 15 miles away in other communities outside. They're not able to leave town. It's just, in the winter, it's just not feasible. So some of the parents have gone to City Hall, or the public library is open in the afternoon. I did hear last week the public library has been having a lot of Wi-Fi issues. So the students have been frustrated because they can't do their coursework there either. So just a real difficulty. Of the 22 students interested in PSEO opportunities last year, only 10 thought they could overcome these barriers. So that's 55% of the students that decided this barrier was too great for them to overcome.
So, and I mean, we're talking about accessibility barriers. We're talking about access to the school district, travel, anything. I mean, knowing the area, I mean, this is your opportunity to really lay it on.
It has made it very difficult for students. Claire is fortunate in that her parents are supportive. We can provide her with a vehicle and a computer and Wi-Fi, and if she can't get home, Grandma does live in town, so that's helpful. But not all students have that, and some of the students really saw this as something they just couldn't overcome. And so it made it very difficult for them to pursue those.
And Claire, if you could tell me, and thank you, Claire, tell me about the others, your peers. What was it like for them? Were they sharing equipment? I know the accessibility. I know some of the difficulties. From your perspective, tell me what it was like.
Thank you, Chair. I would say that I am probably the most fortunate out of all the students that are participating in the PSEO program. I know that some of the students have been cared for by their parents by getting a good car, getting a computer, but there are some students who have the bare minimum and still have to make it through this process.
So can you give me an example of a student that didn't take on these challenges that wasn't successful? I mean, this is your chance to be a voice for those. You overcame some of these. How about some of your classmates?
Well, some of the students have decided that this is an okay policy because they've heard that at home. It's been very divisive in our community. There are people who have been convinced that the school will close if students are allowed to take PSEO opportunities, which is not the case. The funding comes from the state, and it follows the student for their education. So there has been a divisive nature to some of this. So some of the kids who did not take PSEO opportunities have now kind of flipped over to the, in fact, someone told Claire that they should make a law that students can't take college classes in high school.
Very good. Okay, so hang on one second. So I have two questions, Reverend Scott and Reverend Morris. Do you want to continue on this line, or can I get to the testifiers and come back? What would you?
Slides to this.
Reverend Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you, this is to either testifier, do you know of other school districts that are having the same issue?
Yes, I do. I know of at least a half a dozen in our region, and I'm hearing from more people across the state as we became vocal about this issue. We have heard from people across mostly the southern tier of the state, because that's the region we're in, south central and south eastern Minnesota. But I've also heard of some in west central Minnesota that are doing this as well. So my concern is that if this behavior is allowed to continue, that students in the rural areas are going to be denied this opportunity. They will just not allow students access to the building, and that's going to be a hardship for too many students. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to see how widespread the problem was. Thank you.
Representative Norna, same line of questioning?
Yes, just real quick. I may have missed this. What college are you enrolled in?
I'm enrolled in Minnesota West Community and Technical College as a part-time dual credit student.
Okay. One other follow-up question. Do you know any West Rosen Fergus Falls?
I do not, but they're probably related.
I do.
One ran against me a couple of years ago.
It looks like the better man won.
Yeah.
Representative Norris, at this time I would suggest we go through the chair. Representative Norris, is that
done?
Representative Mariani for this as well, or do you want
to? Sorry, I can wait till the.
Very good. Thank you. And so let's go to our next testifiers, and I want to make sure I pronounce this right. So if you could do your last name for me, and then I'll repeat it back to you.
Catalina Anampa Castro.
To the testifier.
Okay. Hello. My name is Catalina Nampa, and I am president of the PSU Student Association at the University of Minnesota, and I'm here to represent the 500 to 600 PSU students who are currently attending the University of Minnesota. Most of them are on spring break, so they couldn't be here. I have heard from prospective and current PSU students how important the grade rating issue is. Last Tuesday, I was speaking at an info session for students interested in PSU, and I heard from one student after the meeting that she's not certain that PSU could work out for her because although it is the right fit, she does not know how to deal with the adverse effects. I did my best to tell her that this was an important decision she was going to have to make because although PSU offers a lot, so does a high GPA. GPA plays a big role in a few key items. Number one, college admissions. A lot of selective colleges unweigh your courses, but they do look at your class ranking. So if your school is ranking other students higher because they're not taking PSEO courses, so their AP courses are being weighted while your PSEO courses are not, those students are going to have higher chances at being admitted into those selective colleges. Number two, job prospects after high school. Some students don't go on to college, but they do go on to technical jobs. When employers ask you what's your GPA, they're not going to understand that it might be lower because of the fact that your school did not weigh the courses you are taking. Number three, scholarships and internship opportunities. Students that want to do things in the summer that are competing against other students at their high school will not look as good as students who have not been doing PSEO. PSEO students are hurt by these measures not to weigh their coursework, which in most cases is equivalent to college and schools and AP. The school districts have assigned that to weigh all coursework equally, like mine, which is Hopkins, end up hurting the PSEO students. Many PSEO coursework has equivalent coursework, like I said. For example, there's a student sitting behind me who goes to Woodbury High School. Last year, she took College in the Schools German 1003 through the University of Minnesota. The course was weighted on her transcript because it was taken at her high school. However, this year, when she took German 1004, at the University of Minnesota, going to the classes, not at her high school, but at the actual school, the course is not weighted. How is that fair? It's the exact same course, through the exact same school, it's just different programs for different people, but she is being punished for this choice. How can we punish our students for trying to seek educational opportunities on college campuses? The opportunities that PSEO offers are beyond what most high schools can provide sometimes. Please remember, our students are the reason our education system exists as you make your decisions. And thank you for listening to me.
Very good. And remember that any quick clarifying questions, otherwise I'm going to hold you for possible questions at the end. Thank you for your testimony. With that, Mr. Bartholomew, if you could please come on down from Minnesota Business Partnership. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. I appreciate the opportunity to speak on behalf of House File 1906. At its core, PSEO is intended to provide additional educational opportunities for students. Unfortunately, in trying to make sure every student has the best education possible, including allowing high school students to participate in PSEO, tensions sometimes rise when there's pressure to preserve existing structures. It is precisely at these times, however, that we need to err on the side of expanding student opportunities. This bill repeals a great example of how crazy things can get when we lose our focus on students. Until 2014, post-secondary institutions weren't allowed to tell families that they could save on tuition costs by having their students participate in PSEO. This restriction, the gag rule, was repealed, but only for students in districts with 700 or more students in grades 10 through 12. Somehow, we've divided our students into two groups based on geography. One group of students gets information, the other group of students does not. You've heard other examples of how students have been discouraged from pursuing post-secondary opportunities. Rather than discouraging students and limiting their options, aren't there some other alternatives that we can come up with? For example, where high schools and post-secondary institutions are close to one another, can't they negotiate the sharing of facilities and staff to expand course offerings? Or for districts with certain student enrollment levels and minimum PSEO participation rates, should there be additional state support? We'd ask that you support House File 1906 because it brings the focus back to giving students the best educational opportunities possible. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. And the next on my list is Mr. Arneson. You come on down, and then Mr. Uni after him. Welcome to the committee.
Yes. Mr. Chair and members, my name is Roger Arts, and I represent the Elementary and Secondary Principals Association. I want to talk about 1906, and I appreciate the opportunity to discuss this with the committee. We had the opportunity to talk about this in the policy committee. A couple things about this and the history. Section 1 of the bill changes a language piece on this, and just so that you have the full story on this, you look on 1.16, the words financial grounds, that used to apply to all school districts. In other words, that the post-secondary institutions could not advertise for PSEO kids on financial grounds. This is what the proponents call the gag rule. That was deleted as applying to all school districts 2 years ago. At the very last minute, the majority leader in the Senate put the language in that you're repealing here today to protect the International Falls High School. This was in his district. The district was looking at losing almost 40% of its students across the street to a community college. And so this language was put in there. I don't think it actually represents well to the committee to suggest to you that there's some sort of gag rule on information that goes out to kids on financial grounds. And the reason that the financial grounds was added at the time, you may disagree with the policy one way or another, but the idea was that kids should not be lured out of their high school experience with the promise of free credits. I mean, that was the basis on it, and the thought was that they should talk to their school counselors as to whether or not these programs were appropriate for them. I'll leave that up to the committee if you want to delete that now. We did have the principal from International Falls here to testify in the policy committee about that as well and the struggles of the small schools. There is a legitimate piece of, and you need to think about PSEO now in the broader context, $33 million a year goes out of the K-12 system and into the higher ed system on PSEO. And as I said in the policy committee, the it's not an apples-to-apples comparison because when we do college in the schools, we keep the foundation aid formula there as well. But we get $4 million a year to do college in the school. And frankly, my clients, the school principals, like that program an awful lot because we keep the kids in the school while they're here rather than having them go at PSEO. What you're hearing about here now with the next provision is a minor part of PSEO where the kid doesn't actually, or the student doesn't go to the post-secondary institution, but they go online. So they're not physically going to Normandale or Northwestern. They're taking a course online. And so where are they physically when they're taking that course? We actually think that we probably need to have some legislation now given that we've had some activities that we're not happy about at all. And you know, putting children on the street in the middle of the day, there aren't any school administrators or teachers that would support that kind of activity. Do you think the language that you have here may not actually accomplish what your goal is relative to the facts that you've heard? If you look at the language, it talks about you need to have a policy that will give the student the same access to computer hardware and software. What we really think you ought to say is that we should provide reasonable access to technology resources to the extent that they're otherwise unavailable to the student and that they're necessary for them to complete the course. And we floated that language around. I think we talked about that in the Senate as well. And we'll continue to work with the author. But we think that's a good solution when we talk about reasonable access, what's necessary for the student to complete the coursework that's required, and that we would make those, in effect, an accommodation for the kids that need them. This language is a little different in the sense that it's not limited to kids that are on online students. And what we would have a concern of is if the student is fully enrolled at Normandale, are fully enrolled at the U, so we don't actually see them during the day, would this say they could come into the school to use technology pieces, you know, if they don't have any other reason to be there, and they don't necessarily need them to complete the coursework? And there's some pieces about that that are important to us. Now, we have talked to the higher ed folks, and they've made it very clear to Once the student is a full-time PSEO kid, that student is under the jurisdiction of the higher ed group. They're under the higher ed rules. They're under the higher ed academic pieces, those sorts of things. And so it's a little different piece here, and we think you need to tighten that up. Finally, let's talk a little bit about the grade weighting as this comes here. And we did this in the committee, I think, 2 years ago. And at that time, there was a proposal to you that you did not accept to say that the local school board had to weight grades for any concurrent enrollment class in the same way that and for any PSEO class in the way that they weighted grades in other classes. Now, what you find on that is this is a local school board issue. Some districts weight grades, some don't. And we really believe that's a local issue. And among school principals, you'll find some principals that think weighting any grades is a bad idea. Some think it's a good idea. We think there's probably merit to having the local school faculty involved in making those particular decisions. But what you didn't do here in the language is you didn't say if the school board refuses to weight grades that they can appeal that to the commissioner. What the language says is if there's a dispute between the district and the pupil. I'm not sure what that means, and I'm not trying to be snarky about the language or interpreting this, but if we're going to apply this, I mean, does that mean if you didn't weight my grade and I'm unhappy about it, that the commissioner weighs in on every one of those cases? If you want to make an appeal if a board has refused to adopt a policy, you probably should change this language to provide it that way. We really do believe that this is a local issue. And my understanding is, I mean, as you can see, all of our kids in Minnesota, and particularly the kids that are in these motivated programs, I mean, these are smart, bright kids that are well organized. They haven't come just to you. They have come to local school boards as well. And they are pushing these issues. And some boards are saying yes, and some are saying no. Sometimes it gets easier to come and talk to you to skip that process of going to those local boards. We don't think that's a good thing, and we think that's where you ought to make these particular decisions, Mr. Chair. So this is a highly successful program. It is important for you to keep in mind that there are some significant geographic biases in this. College in the Schools actually keeps local school districts healthy and open. We have school districts that would close without College in the Schools. This particular program works if you have a community college somewhere that the kids can get to, or they can get to Normandale, or they can get to the University of Minnesota, or they can get to Southwest State, where I think something like 30% of their students are in some form of concurrent enrollment programs. So we want to be really careful, too. There's a formula here that seems to work for the 8,300 K-12 students that are in this, and 1,700, as I understand the numbers, homeschool students in this as well. And we spend quite a bit of money when we say $34 million, and that comes out of our K-12 system, it's not an actual appropriation, into those 10,000 students. So, Mr. Chair, I'd answer any questions that you might have, and appreciate the opportunity to visit today.
Representative Mine, to the testifier.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Quickly, Ms. Harrison. Say a little bit more specifically on how it is the College and the Schools strengthens K-12 schools.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mariani, in particularly in our small schools, I mean, if you have a graduating class of 100 and we can keep all 100 of them there in this school, enrolled in the College and the School program, we get the foundation aid for that, plus we have a very healthy student body with the 100 kids that are there. If a third of them go into PSEO, then that high school just lost one-third of its funding. So we're looking at which teachers do we cut, which program, and you get into this kind of spiral of moving down with less programs. I mean, and so when we keep the students there in the high school with the college credits, and you know, because they're getting the college credits for free then, that really keeps that school healthy, particularly in rural Minnesota. But I think, you know, I mean, one of the, and I appreciate that question, because one of the unintended consequences, and it's nice when you have unintended consequences that are good, and one of the unintended consequences of college, of PSEO, is College in the Schools. I mean, this was the high school's response to this, that we'll do free credits. The program is very expensive for us, but it's been worth the money to keep the kids, to keep our programs healthy and fully funded. Because, unfortunately, you know, we run schools, and this will make Mr. Strom cringe, but we run schools on this Ponzi scheme. You know, we got to keep having more people on the bottom, you know, and students. And once we quit adding those kids on the bottom, you know, I don't mean on the bottom anything other than the numbers, then we start to contract. And college and the schools allow us to stay stable on that, Mr. Chair.
And thank you. And just quickly, we do have one more test fire and one more bill, but Representative Maiani.
And quickly, just to follow up, it seems to me there's something else that CIS does in terms of strengthening the school. Doesn't it do something in terms of the credentials of the licensed teachers in the school itself?
Mr. Chair?
To the test fire, excuse me.
Yeah, Representative Maiani, absolutely, and we've been actively involved now with the Higher Learning Commission, and you've heard about that, but it has our workforce go back and get extra credit, and you've heard the teachers come in here and talk to you when we did the HLC discussions. I mean, these are really high-quality, committed teachers that teach the CIS classes in the schools. I mean, you just cannot be impressed by them. And we're going to continue to improve that workforce, given the credentialing issues that we've gotten from the Higher Learning Commission. Mr. Chair, I appreciate indulgence in spending a little time on this.
Thank you. And Representative Meyer, any good? Sir. Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay. To the testifier, who is really versed in this, and not me so much, but I'm always impressed when young people come and testify. Right? And you may have answered this in your piece about weighing in. But the young lady asks, you know, what is fair about taking the PSEO course in high school and get credit and then going to the college and not getting credit for that. And I think I heard you mentioned it should be a local decision. But can you weigh and give us a response to that and what's fair about that?
Mr. Arneson.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I actually, sitting in the audience here listening to that example, I thought it was very compelling to say if you're taking German 4 and German 3 is weighted at the school, German 4 should be, to the extent that that's taken as an accelerated course at PSEO, that should happen as well. And that made sense to me. So you hope that local boards, when they're making the decisions on weighting grades, are fair about it. When we fought this out before, it was every class that was PSEO, and now it's kind of a problematic piece. But no, I think the suggestion about that or direction, and I know that Chairs Loon and Erickson have this method of giving me some direction on these things from time to time. I think that's a compelling fact, and that we ought to make sure that those things happen.
It's compelling, but it's also time-consuming for the person who's doing it, you know, and to not get any credit for that is even more disheartening. So can you talk about, I mean, is there not any communication to the student that if they invest their time and energy to going to the college that they won't get credit so they can make a decision about that? I mean, what did that process look like?
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Arneson,
I think there's a little, I think there's a little confusion here. The student gets credit for the class.
Okay.
What we're talking about is in terms of what your class rank is, are you going to get a weighted grade? So if you take AP Chemistry, and you get an A, you may get a 4.5 credit for that in some systems rather than just a 4.0. Never got one of those myself, but I heard about kids that did get it. And that's what we're talking about, is relative to your classmates when you're taking a PSEO class, where should you be in class rank and valedictorian? That's what we're talking about. They would get the underlying undergraduate credits for those.
So, Mr. Chair, it's more of a competitive process.
That's what we're talking about, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Thiessen.
Can we just get information on how many people are taking online PSEO? Do we know that versus?
So the question is, would you get information on how many people are taking PSEO online? And do you need that now or can we?
No, no.
Okay.
Can I just, yes.
Okay. Very good. I want to make sure.
No, for the future. Yeah.
Okay.
I move to recess.
Mr. Rooney, if you can come on up, and Chair Loon, if you'd like to comment while he's coming up.
Yes, actually, there's another testifier who I think wanted to testify to this point or offer.
Okay, I'm sorry. And please state your name.
My name is Stephanie Inquay.
Okay.
I'm the student that Catalina made reference to earlier who took German in my high school through CIS, and then the next year I did it through Minnesota, the University of Minnesota for PSEO, and I just think it's fair that if I took the same, pretty much the same class in high school, and I got to wait for it on my GPA, I should be able to get the same weight when I take it in college. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. And Mr. Rooney, if you can come on down, and again, remember this is going to be held over for possible inclusion, and just keep us moving along. So welcome to the committee, Mr. Rooney.
Mr. Chair, members, good afternoon. My name is Ado Shuni, Director of Government Relations at the Minnesota Department of Education. I had a brief time to chat last week with Representative Loon regarding this bill, and I just wanted to kind of reiterate some of the concerns that we had regarding this issue that we brought up in Ed Policy. But first, just say we always enjoy looking at opportunities to expand students' access to post-secondary opportunities. So we would just like to look at the parts that maybe could use a little bit of work. As was mentioned before on the issue around the referral to the commissioner, if there's a debate around weighting of GPA, again, we do believe and we agree that this is a local issue. Not all courses are considered equally rigorous. They're based on different standards. Weighting an MDE would be an extremely lengthy and detailed process, and it would most likely be beyond MDE's capacity to do that in a consistent manner to align with the expectations of local districts as well as students. So we just want to make sure that that's stayed at a local level where those decisions can be kept best left to the individual districts who know their communities best. On the earlier middle college area where a student who's attending a charter school can access those programs, just want to note that this would most likely have a cost as more students would attend these programs. We know that earlier middle college programs currently are for students in alternative, alternative approved programs. So this would open it up to all students who are in charters, not just those who would be in an alternative program should they have gone through the district school. And so we also wanted to look if that's maybe an equity issue for students who are in district schools but don't qualify for alternative or don't attend alternative programs. They don't have the access to that program, while students in charter schools do, but don't have to be in alternative programs. And finally, on one of the last sections for charter students attending who qualify for graduation incentives programs, who are in can attend charter schools, they can already do that. So we're wondering if maybe we should look at the language and maybe get to the intent of what is really meant there, and then if there's any cost implications there. And I would be happy to stand for any questions.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Rooney. And seeing no more people on the list, we will come back to your bill, Chair Loon, and questions. Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, this is not so much a question as an observation. And I will work to keep this really brief. It seems to me that what Chair Loon has before us in this bill, what the advocates are responding to, has less to do with whether or not, for example, the administrators in FOLDA are hard-hearted, or the teachers and parents and students, on the other hand, are hard-hearted. It seems to me that we have a fundamental flaw in the way that this legislature has decided to provide resources for this opportunity. I think that we've created an incentive or a disincentive, if you will, an economic one, that sets up the kind of contentious behavior that no doubt is happening across the state. I mean, small school districts are pulled up, no doubt, have to find a way to be able to make sure they've got the resources to have a certain number of computer labs with a pretty limited property tax base from which to draw from. And students in those school districts are absolutely pretty wise to be able to, all students, but especially in small, I would imagine small school districts, are pretty wise to cast their net broadly in terms of adding, you know, new dimensionality to their educational experience. And so it seems to me that the wiser thing we ought to be doing, Mr. Chair, with this whole approach is instead of trying to fix the symptoms of an economic disincentive, let's just go straight to the issue here and let's fix how we fund PSEO. Why are we funding PSEO at the expense of our K-12 schools? It just makes no sense to me. you know, if we really want to open opportunities, I think we ought to just make that direct investment, find a mechanism to be able to do that. It doesn't sound like it's actually pretty expensive, relatively speaking, but it certainly would be a big difference for particularly many of our smaller school districts, it seems to be, particularly in greater Minnesota. So, Chair Loon, I am totally empathetic to the issues that we're trying to address here, and I will work with you and others here to find a way to equitably address those issues, because they are issues. But at the root of it, I think, is the real problem is us. We're the ones who have created the economic mechanism here that sets up the kind of behavior that we're seeing across the state here. I think it's only going to get worse as students rightfully, you know, pursue these enriched academic opportunities. If that's going to be a part of our K-12 major design, then let's pay for it out of K-12 and not take it out of the hide of our local school districts. I don't think that's what you're trying to do, Madam Chair. That was decided before you and I even got to this place. But at some point, we really ought to fix that issue. Otherwise, we're going to be facing these issues for the next 5, 10, 15 years. There's going to be all sorts of contentious stuff that's going to come up. And at the end, we're going to wind up with a pretty bad system. So I'll stop there. I thank you for bringing the issue forward for us to debate.
And I think that's a nice way to end member questions to your bill and renewing your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the members. I want to especially thank the testifiers. And, you know, just quickly, and I appreciate the comments that were made in terms of, you know, maybe we'll continue to do some tweaking along the way here. But as we heard, you know, a lot of times bills are passed to, they don't necessarily affect a lot of people, or in our case, school districts, but it's more to highlight, kind of, don't do this. This is not the way we treat students. This is not how to go about operating a program or making a point. You know, I strongly believe that this is an option that our students, it's been important for our students to have this option. It's something they should continue to have. And if we need to work out, you know, some difficulty with how it's being administered, that's what we'll do. But I hope also with regards to Representative Mariani's comment, we don't get to where, again, in some cases, schools, and I will look at the economic impact, but sometimes it's not even a big impact. Because the schools do still continue to get a small portion of the funding per student, even if the student is a full-time PSEO. They may not ever come in the building. School's still getting money for those students at some level. So sometimes it's just the point of not liking this option, and that's not okay. So with that, Mr. Chair, I renew my motion that House File 1906 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we're on to the next bill, House File 1558.
Representative Kreisha, do you want to go ahead and move your bill? And I think we are moving it
to state gov finance.
To state gov finance, sorry. Go ahead. Representative Kreisha moves House File 1558 be re-referred to the State Government Finance Committee. And to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. And you'll have to indulge me for a minute. I know we're short on time, but I'm actually going to try to take this a different course. And I'm reminded of a poem that I know from Corinne Robinson that says, "The path that leads nowhere." There's a path that leads nowhere, and in a meadow that I know. And the reason I bring that up is because what I've been trying to accomplish to this point, I feel like I have groups talking past each other rather than talking to each other. I fully recognize, and for the people that are interested in this bill, I fully recognize the importance of having a public employee insurance program. I fully recognize that members of a teachers union and collective bargaining should have the ability to invoke that. And they should be able to have that as an option. However, in the good intentions of getting to the HIDIT language, which is the Health Insurance Transparency Act, we ended up carving up districts and pitting smaller school districts in the rural areas versus service co-ops versus self-insured. And what I've been trying to do is balance that. And so I'm going to tip my hand a bit to where I'm going with this, members. I'm actually going to ask for your help and invite some comments and your collaboration as I move through committee. On the bill, what I am thinking of doing, and I fully have this bill, I know how this could go. We could have the conversations, people come up, we talk about different things, a vote happens, it's going to move on. I would actually like to just solve this issue. So here's a couple of recommendations that I am putting in front of you, that I am putting together amendments for the next committee. I actually want to talk through them here before I actually offer those, and here's what they are in spirit. On line 1.12, we would reinstate the language of one of these requests must go to the administrator governed by Chapter 43A. What that means is one of the requests would have to go out for PEEP for bid. I fully recognize that's working for some school districts. I never want to take that away. However, I would add, if requested by the largest collective bargaining unit. So in other words, let's put this back into the bargaining hands. Let's put this back between the unions and the administration. Let's have them talk through this. So if you want to request a PEEP bid, request a PEEP bid. And the school district should acknowledge that. That would be one amendment that I would offer up in the next committee, and I want to talk this through. The second thing, if I go to page 3, page 3, on line 3.7, I would strike out, I would leave this language and strike out the self-insured. Part of my compromise is if you're in a self-insured, and one of the problems we've had is to get to this agreement, we carved out the self-insured. I'm going to upset the self-insured districts, I know, but I think if the union representative requests a PEEP bid, that should be honored. It's part of the cooperative. If the self-insured can offer a more competitive self-insured bid, they should. But if the largest collecting unit says, hey, we'd like a PEEP bid, they should as well. So again, I'm trying to move this down to the collective bargaining process. The third thing that I would offer up, and you'll have to take my word on this and know that I am writing these amendments up and have them. I'm not just going to say it to get through committee. I'm really trying to work through this because I've heard from both sides. The next thing that I would like to do is we have the lines 3.13 through 3.16. We've added this language because what this does right now to the smaller rural school districts is the language says that the largest unit can unilaterally leave on their own. The situation this is set up is that a school district can go into the insurance process bidding. The teachers' union can request a PEEP bid, as is law right now, get that PEEP bid, and then leave on their own without having the conversation between the teachers' union and management. What this does is, if they leave unilaterally without coming to an agreement, it leaves the custodians, the cooks, the paraprofessionals with a smaller shrinking pool and more expensive possible claims. Because, again, the largest pool has left unilaterally. So what I would add to this is that we leave this language, that we not allow them to unilaterally leave, but we add this language, unless agreed to by the district and other groups. In other words, let's take it back to the process. Let's bring it back, and if the bid comes back and the largest collective bargaining unit says, we would like to go to PEEP, have that conversation with management and the other groups to make sure you understand the effects on the rates that may happen to you, like I said, the paraprofessionals, the custodians, and the cooks, and the other units. Because as we know with insurance, when you start squeezing the pool around, that's when things can go one direction or another. So these are my compromises. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to make it a more fair process. I'm trying to make it more consistent across the board, and I'm asking for your help in that. I am not trying to take PEEP away. I am not trying to take that process away. I am not trying to take the HIDA process away. What I'm trying to say is we have 87 counties with many, many school districts. Let's not pit them against each other. And with that, I know we have some test fires, but I'll stand for questions. And Representative Murphy reminded me I had 4 minutes, so I think I'm past time.
Yes. Thank you, Representative Kresha. And I would invite testifiers forward. Committee on Higher Ed has this room at 3 o'clock, so we're going to have to go real quick to finish this up.
And Madam Chair, while they're coming up, just so you know, I will offer those amendments in the next committee, but I will make no further comments so we can get to the testimony.
Thank you, Representative Kresha. All right, who would like to testify?
Okay.
All right, welcome. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mark Schneezy with Education Minnesota. This is the first that we've heard of these proposals by Representative Fischer, and we appreciate the willingness that he has put forward to work on this bill to come up with some sort of solution that might work for all parties. So I guess what we would like to do is continue to work with Representative Fischer and try to come to some sort of resolution on the amendments and withdraw our testimony at this point in time.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate that. Is there anyone else here who wants to testify? Okay, so everyone's going to withhold. All right. Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, I am concerned about this committee's area of expertise and respect for that. The motion is to move this on to State Gov.
State Gov Finance.
And it not just feels like, it looks like and is, the bill was brought up, a bunch of ideas were thrown out, and then we're going to rush it out the door. And I've got some concern about that. Not formal amendments. I'm fine with conversations, but it seemed like the conversation happened first and could have been put into amendments, and that this your committee is kind of being carved out of the process here on an issue that is very important in a lot of school districts across the state. So I'm wondering about holding this bill over. To allow this committee its deliberative opportunity.
Yes. If you allow me just a second for our committee administrator on the schedule this week. Representative Krisha, if we were to wave this over to give you an opportunity to amend the bill in this committee tomorrow, and again, this is going to add to a very lengthy committee bit of work tomorrow. We're most definitely going to be here in the evening tomorrow. Is that possible? And I haven't had a chance to check with the chair of State Gov Finance to know how their agenda shapes up. As you know, as we get into deadline weeks, any change in one committee can kind of derail another committee's schedule and plans.
Madam Chair, with all due respect, I appreciate that, and Representative Dabney, I appreciate your comments. Let me offer this. I'm fully aware I can get this bill out of this committee and go on. I am working very hard by the fact that my testifiers have asked to withdraw. I believe we're getting close to agreement. I will stand by my word, and those that have known me, I will put amendments on your desk. You will have those in the House floor. You can look at those. And if they do not meet what we think can be a good agreement, I'll take that up in State Gov, and I'll take all my lumps. I believe I can get there. I think I'm getting close. I would ask the indulgent to keep me moving so I can keep this process going. I've been at this for 4 years, and I think I'm close.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dudley.
I certainly have no question as to the sincerity of Representative Krisha. I do have concerns about doing committee process in committee, not doing committee process on the House floor. We have a committee process for a reason, and it is, in fact, to bring expertise that committee members either come in with or develop or both to the subject matter before us. So an alternative that's been suggested to me is to have this bill move along today and then come back. So the motion at State Gov is not to move it to the register or wherever, but is to return it to K-12. And perhaps then we can see how you've amended it in State Gov and review it as a piece of educational policy and finance.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. And okay. Representative Krisha, that would be amenable to this chair if that's acceptable to you.
Madam Chair, and here's what I have to ask, and I appreciate it. I believe the last stop was meant to be the state gov, and so we were going to end up in that bill. And respectfully, let me talk. I took a big risk by even tipping my hand to these amendments. I could have just stayed silent. And I agree. We do this in committee. The amendments are going to be heard in state gov. They're already with the community administrator. They're drafted. I really wanted to take the temperature of everyone to see what was going to happen, because I was hoping, and by looking at some of the noddings and by the fact that you are willing to work with me, that tells me we can get there. You know, and I realize there's no agreement. I understand that. I absolutely understand that. And so, respectfully, what I would say is if you get me to that committee, I don't know that I can come back in time and then go back to state gov to be end up in the omnibus bill.
Madam Chair.
Representative Abney.
Two things. In terms of your inclusion in a possible inclusion in a state gov omnibus bill, that can happen whether the committee has final possession of this House file or not. So I appreciate the concern, but my observation of past practice in this body has been chairs have a good deal of latitude. But unfortunately, Mr. Krisha, you reinforced my concern when you said that these weren't points of conversation. These were amendments that were already drafted and were in possession of another committee. It seems to me at some point this committee should get the bill, whether it's amended with or in this form and with the amendments, for its consideration.
And with that, Madam Chair, I guess the best thing I can do now is I'll renew my motion to go to state gov finance.
All right. Representative Scott had her hand up, so I'm going to call on her first. Representative Scott.
Just real briefly, Madam Chair, this handout from Lakeville School District, who did that come from? Okay. And so, Madam Chair, this bill before us, is this trying to change what seems to be working here as testified to by this document from Lakeville?
Representative Scott, let's address this issue first. Representative Krisha, did you want to comment to, there was information passed out about the Lakeville's situation? Here's the situation. We have to vacate this room because higher education has it in 5 minutes. So I think in the interest of moving this forward, we should move it to state gov finance. I will continue to work with committee members that if there's concerns and I will talk with Chair Anderson about referring it back to me after action. If that is something that you as the minority lead, Representative Abney, feel is something that we need to do, I am fully prepared to speak to Chair Anderson and to have that happen. And if Representative Krisha can assure us that that is something he'd be open to, I think I'd like to go ahead and move this bill to state gov.
And if I could just add, and Madam Chair, I appreciate, you know, another alternative too is we could go ahead and have it heard, and if it goes well in state gov, which I think it will, we can do an informational hearing and bring the conversation back up and still leave the bill over there. Just an option.
All right. So,
I want to do it correctly.
Thank you. Representative Abney, is that going to work for you?
You know, my preference is to have real bills in front of real committees. So I appreciate your willingness to work with Chair Anderson to have the bill come back. She can certainly include it in her omnibus bill if she wants, without being in final possession of the bill. So I would appreciate it coming back. It seems appropriate. You valued it enough to put it on the agenda today, and now we're getting jammed up. But it is a significant bill that has significant impact, not just on state gov issues, but on K-12 issues, and should be given a full hearing here, I would suggest.
Thank you, Representative Abney.
Madam Chair.
Representative Fisher. So I will speak with Chair Anderson about referring it back to the committee, but in the interest of allowing her to keep her schedule and to hear it tomorrow and for you the opportunity to amend it, as you have publicly described and stated, I'm going to renew your motion that will be referred to the Committee on State Gov Finance. All right, any further questions? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
No.
All right. The bill will be referred to State Gov Finance, and I will be speaking with Chair Anderson. We are adjourned for today. Thank you.